Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, this is Silvio Cantu in Dallas, Texas, on Tuesday, December 24th, and we say Merry Christmas, Feliz Navidad to all of our friends listening today. We're going to do a great show today. We're going to focus on the experience of Christmas, and we've got two great friends joining us today, Frank Burke and Terce Bindeberg, and they're going to share with us some of their Christmas stories, some of their Christmas readings, and it's just going to be a lot of fun as we salute Christmas. And we're doing a special show today for all of you, for all of our listeners and all of our friends across the world, because obviously through the Internet you can pick us up wherever you may be. And I hope my son is listening to me. He's in the U.S. Army in Hawaii, although I have a feeling he's probably sleeping at this time. But anyway, I know he'll listen to the show later on. We certainly salute all the troops. We say Merry Christmas to all the troops around the world who are celebrating Christmas away from their families. By the way, that initial musical piece was by a fellow named Derek Miller. He's a guitarist. He's got a great Christmas album. And that was a wonderful Christmas rendition of What Child Is This?, one of the many, many great Christmas songs of the Christmas season. One quick note, I got to put in a plug in for my book, because you can still get it. You can still get it. You know, you can still get your digital copy. Santa doesn't leave until, like, what, 6 o'clock Central Time? That's when he finally takes off. I understand he's flying elsewhere, but he does go back to the North Pole to pick up his American bags. So you still got time. You still got time to get your digital copy. You go to the Amazon and you order your digital copy, and Santa will actually put it in your computer. How nice of him. He'll do that. So get yourself a copy of Cubanos in Wisconsin, and you got time. You got time to do it. We're going to be featuring a little bit of music as we look at this wonderful Christmas holiday. And one of my favorite pianists here in the Texas area is a fellow by the name of Mario Ajeda. He's actually a music professor at Stephen Austin University in Central Texas. So let's take a little musical break, and we'll be back with Frank and Terce right after this. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, and we say Feliz Navidad to Terce. How are you, Terce?
How are you, Silvio? I'm fine. Thank you. Feliz Navidad to you, too.
All right, and we say Merry Christmas. We're bilingual here, Frank. We say Merry Christmas, Frank.
Thank you, and Merry Christmas. Feliz Navidad to you and the family, to Tracy and all the listeners.
All right.
Same here, Frank.
We have it in Spanish, and we have it in English. Does anybody know any other language? I don't right now. I can't remember.
I believe
Frank,
it's Joyeux Noël in French.
How is it? I'm sorry? How do you say
Joyeux
it in French?
Joyeux Noël in French,
okay.
I believe.
There you go. All right, so we got French out of the way. Well, I thought today we do something special with Christmas Eve and Christmas on the 25th, and we look at the two cultures that have made my life, you know, the American culture and the Cuban culture. And, Frank, you're going to share with us something of the English American culture, and Tercy, you're going to share with us something of Nochebuena, which is what we celebrate in the Cuban culture, of course, very much influenced by our Spanish ancestors. But let me begin by just introducing both of you to our audience. Tercy, you are a fairly new friend of our show. You've been on for a few months, but you're a storyteller, which is I find that fascinating. So tell us how you got into that.
Well, I started in 1992, I'm trying to think, 1992, and I've been doing it pretty much full-time since then. My sister is a children's author. Her name is Carmen Didi, and she began to tell schools at her stories at her girls' schools at the same time that she was writing her first picture book. And she found out that there was a National Storytelling Association, there was a local storytelling group in Atlanta, Southern Order of Storytellers. Anyway, she wooed me into the storytelling world, and she says, you fit here. And I did. At first I said, oh, my accent, they'll never understand me, but the kids like it. Even the middle school kids like it. And they all want to know if I know Ricky Ricardo.
And what do you tell them? That you know Desi Arnaz, not Ricky Ricardo, right?
Well, I mean, he's not even my contemporary, but I tell him, yeah, we used to have coffee together.
Well, for some in the audience who may not know, and that's hard to know, because Desi Arnaz, Ricky Ricardo, is an international celebrity, but Desi Arnaz actually came to the United States in the 1930s. His father was an important politician in Cuba, and his father got into political trouble, so he took the family out of the country, and that's how Desi ended up in the United States. And then he was a band leader for a while, and he made some records, and he was basically in a music business until he met Lucy, and I Love Lucy, of course, became a part of our culture. I was one of the most successful TV shows ever. But then there's another part to Desi's life, and that's how he became such a successful business executive, television executive, and he was really very much at the forefront of a lot of the sitcoms of the 1960s with a company that he created with Lucy called Desi Lou. So that's my little plug for not just Ricky Ricardo, but for Desi Arnaz, one of the great business success stories of the 20th century. Frank, I don't know if you were familiar with that story, Frank.
I was. In fact, one of the things that I think he did, which was a major gift to many of us who like good television, was he took some chances with the Desilu Playhouse. One of them was a very, very morbid production called Alas Babylon, which showed the world at the after a nuclear attack.
Huh.
And the other one, of course, which was very successful, was The Untouchables.
Right, yeah. And also Star Trek. A lot of people don't know that Star Trek came out of Desi Lu, and the show was about ready to be dropped. I mean, it couldn't get anywhere. A lot of people don't know that. The show has been so successful, but at the beginning it really wasn't. It didn't connect with viewers. And they somehow stuck with the show. I mean, they could have killed it, but they stuck with it. So they had the vision, I guess, to see a good show in Star Trek. But Frank, tell us about yourself.
Well, I live in Wisconsin, where it's today beautiful. We've had a lot of snow, so it's going to be a very white Christmas. That part is nice. I grew up in New York, work in marketing. I'm a marketing and communications consultant. I do a lot of work with industrial companies. We have a quite small company now, my wife, myself, and just a couple of others, and have enjoyed that very much. And a lot of it, what I do is technical writing. I've recently done a number of columns for trade magazines and some white papers, things like that. I'm fascinated by technology and love it, and I'm very, very grateful for the opportunity to work with the people who are making manufacturing revive in this country.
Great. And you're also a contributor to the American Thinker, and that's how we first met, one of your articles at the American Thinker. But we're not going to do politics today, Frank. So, we're just going to focus on the holiday. I don't want to, because every time I think of that article you wrote, I want to get off on it. But today we're just going to stay.
For the show today, I brought another article that I wrote, which is actually one of my favorites. Peg wanted me to resubmit it to Thinker, but I thought that would be kind of cheating. So I thought maybe I'd read it on the show today.
Well, you will. You will. You'll get a chance you'll get a chance to do that in a couple of minutes, because what we're going to do is we're going to look at, you know, having grown up in the United States, and I spent some time in Wisconsin. I mean, I didn't know you then, but I spent some time in Wisconsin as well. And I wanted today to say Merry Christmas. So many of our listeners, of course, have a Cuban or Latin American background. And, of course, many of our listeners are obviously born in the United States as well. So I thought today maybe we mix the two and look at these two wonderful cultures and what it was like to grow up. And I wanted to say one quick thing before I forget. I posted something at the American Thinker today about the three wise men, Thirsty. You might want to see that. And I'm going to have it posted at Babalu as well. And I'm also including a copy of the show so our friends over in the Cuban American community can get to hear your story. But why don't we do this? Let's begin, ladies first. And let's begin with Thirsty, who's going to tell us a little Noche Buena, and for the benefit of the audience, Noche Buena literally means good night, and in the more Spanish Catholic tradition, this is where the family would get together on December 24th, and they would have a big meal. It's called Noche Buena. Then after that, you normally went to the midnight mass. When I was a kid, it used to be at midnight. I don't know how now they do it at 9 o'clock, but it was a real midnight mass, and then you come home. And anyway, I just wanted to set you up, Tercy. So you take it away. You and your story, take it away.
All right. I'm going to start by saying that Papi, my mother came from a more, not privileged, but my Papi, well, to a degree at the beginning of my grandparents' marriage, it was privileged. Later, my grandfather left, my grandmother, and they were fine. Daddy came from a family that didn't have a lot of money. And he said as a little boy, he could tell that Christmas was coming because the morning glories bloomed. And I looked it up, and they bloom in Cuba from December until March. That's their blooming time. And they're yellow. They're not blue. And it's the flower is indigenous to Cuba. So that's one thing that I always think about when I think about Noche Buena, because Papi always told me that when I was little, that was one of the ways that he knew. Also, he also loved music from Argentina. So he learned a song that is so dramatic, and it comes from a movie, and it says, Échale guindas al pavo. I'm going to tell you what I'm saying in a minute. Échale guindas al pavo, que yo le echaré a la pava. Azúcar, canela, y clavo, que yo le echaré a la pava. And he used to sing that, and it's a song about how to. It's very dramatic, but it's just a song about how to dress your turkey or the guanajo.
Oh, right,
and,
okay.
And guindas are, I found that guindas are cherries with a CH. I can't say my CH is real well, but that's what they are. So it says add cherries, and then I will add cinnamon, cloves, and sugar. And it's a very dramatic song, and he would come home with bags full of groceries. This was before Castro. I was real little, but I remember this. And bringing nuts and all the things that we would have around Christmas time, special fruit, and he would be singing that song. And that's a very sweet memory of Cuba. When we left Cuba, we didn't come straight here. We went to Mexico. And I'm going to tell you a Noche Buena story from Mexico, okay? We were in an apartment building where other Cuban exiles lived, and we were lucky enough when we left Cuba that we had family in Mexico City that had lived there for many years, one of my grandmother's cousins, and was successful. And so the time we were there, which was from the end of November until the beginning of February or so, he rented a furnished apartment for us. And in that apartment building, there were other Cuban exiles. And that night, for Noche Buena, the good night, all the families got together, and we had our first Christmas. My parents, because some of them had been there for a year at least, but my parents and my sister and I and other Cubans had our first meal outside of Cuba, and actually the first good Noche Buena meal, because there was so much. There just wasn't enough food at Cuba. In Cuba,
that's
when
right.
We left, you know, we had the ration card, and so Noche Buena had been something we hadn't experienced for a long while, several years. But before that night, the rooftop of that building was a place where the ladies at work, the maids, would hang clothes. And I heard two stories as a little girl in that rooftop. And they were told to me by this Mexican lady that became our friend, who was a maid in the building. And I was talking to her that day. I'm just going to tell you one because the other one has nothing to do with Christmas Eve. But I was telling her that we were away from home, that I was excited about the food we were going to eat because we hadn't had any real Noche Buena food for a long time, but that that I miss home too, and that it was kind of sad to be away from home, and I didn't know what the United States was going to be like in this place called Decatur. That's Decatur, okay? Decatur, Georgia.
Decatur.
Yes. Decatur. And so she said, and I said, and you know, some of the people tonight are going to go to La Misa del Gallo, which is the rooster's mass. That was
right,
that midnight
right.
mass.
Right.
And
right.
And I haven't been to a mass in a long time. And she said, I'm going to tell you a story about a little girl that hadn't been to a mass in a while too. And so she told me this story. She said that long, long ago in a village, there was a little girl. And there are many variants. Let me pause here and say there are many variants of this story, but this one is the one I like because it's the one I heard from her. She said there was a little girl who lived in this village whose mother was a weaver. And she wove beautiful things. The little girl was too little to really learn how to weave yet, but she tried to weave something that Christmas, because it was the custom when you went to the Misa del Gallo, the midnight mass, the rooster's mass is called, to take something to put in the pesebre, the nativity that was set up at the very front of the church, the little manger. And so she wanted to give something to the baby Jesus. And she tried and tried, and it came out really ugly. She just, in her eyes, okay, because it wasn't perfect like what her mom used to do. And so she decided not to take it that night and actually hid it under her little pillow. And she went to the mass, and her mother, she and her mother and her dad didn't have a lot of money. And as it usually happens in these stories, and when they went to the mass, a lot of people were there, and they were very well dressed, and they had beautiful gifts. The children had beautiful gifts to give to the Holy Child, and she had nothing. So she told her mom she wanted to stay outside, and her mom said, "You can stay outside if you don't want to go inside. If you feel badly, about not having something to give to the baby Jesus. And so she started to cry, and suddenly she looked up, and there was a star that started to twinkle at her. And it seemed to get closer and closer and closer, and suddenly she heard a voice that said, the baby Jesus will be happy with anything you bring to him. The most important thing that you can give to him is your heart. Why don't you just take some things, some wildflowers, even weeds, take them and place them there in the manger. And so the little girl did what the star asked her to do, and she took a bunch of weeds mostly, and she put them inside her manta, her little coat, her little wrap that she was wearing, and she walked up the aisle to the very front of the church. And some of the kids could see that they were, that she had weeds in her manta, and they started to laugh at her. But some of the children, you know, asked the other kids to silence the other kids and told them not to be unkind. When she got to the very front of the church, they say that she placed the weeds all around the manger, and as she turned around, suddenly the weeds turned into the most beautiful flowers. They were red with a little yellow center. And today we call that flower La Flor de Nochebuena, La Flor de Pascua, the Christmas flower, or in the United States we call it the poinsettia. And they say that when people left the church and went outside, the fields were covered with poinsettias as well.
Wow.
And they were heart-shaped flowers. Just like, not heart-shaped, star-shaped flowers, just like the star that had spoken to her. And that night, when she went back to her home, she thanked God for the miracle, and she thanked the baby Jesus for the miracle that night and for the miracle of the star. And when she put her little hand under her pillow, which was her custom to do that, she found what she had woven for the baby Jesus, and she pulled it out. And it was the most beautiful scarf which she wore for many, many years to come. And that's the story.
Oh, that's great, Dercy. I think it's a wonderful, that is a beautiful story, just an absolutely lovely story. I was going to say, when you mentioned Decatur or Decatur, that, my parents used to say Madison.
Yes, I know. I know. And when we went to the embassy, to get our papers in order, I remember sitting there with my parents, because I was 10, so I remember a lot. And Papi would say, "We're going to Decatur." And they would say, "The what?" ¿Qué cosa usted dice?" Because he spoke Spanish, but he had an English accent. ¿Qué cosa? Decatur. Decatur, Georgia. Not even Georgia, Georgia. So anyway, I wanted to tell you that a man named Poinsett, who was the first ambassador to Mexico, is the one that brought the poinsettia to the United States, and that's why it has that name. And when I was a little girl and I went to piano lessons, my piano teacher had a poinsettia, and it towered over me. It was in her little inside courtyard, and since then I've read that they can grow as high as 13 feet, can you imagine,
wow,
in their natural habitat. So I just wanted to share that, and that's it.
Well, that's a beautiful story, Tercy. We appreciate that very much. There's so many little stories like that, and I know you have a lot of others for different times of the year, but I think it's wonderful that you share these stories with children, because so often, children don't hear that many stories anymore, and I think it's kind of cool for them to hear stories like that. Now, Frank, you are going to share with us something that you wrote. Why don't you do that?
Well, thank you very much. I'll give a little preface to this. And there's one Christmas song that has always struck me as being particularly melancholy and sad. And so I several years ago, around 2010, I started investigating the background of the song, and I was absolutely fascinated by it. So I wrote an article for American Thinker the title at American Thinker was a special Christmas song. My original title, which I didn't use, was The Saddest Christmas Song. But I would like to dedicate this to your son, to all of the people who are in our armed forces, and to their families who miss them on Christmas. And here it is. In the season of joy, one song's poignant lyric recalls the darkest days of the Second World War and provides a message of hope for today. By 1943, the full impact of World War II was felt in the United States. American troops were fighting and dying in places that few had heard of, places with names like Guadalcanal, Attu, and Tarawa in the Pacific. In the European theater, the invasion of Sicily was met with fierce resistance. On the home front, the entire fabric of daily life changed as the economy switched to a war footing. Strategic materials, including sugar, meat, gasoline, and tires, were rationed, and factories that formerly produced consumer goods were now engaged in the war effort. Women replaced men on the production line, and scout troops conducted scrap drives. In Birmingham, Alabama, a songwriter named Hugh Martin, possibly with the assistance of his associate, Ralph Blaine, composed a Christmas song for the MGM film Meet Me in St. Louis, starring Judy Garland. The original lyrics were closely intertwined with the plot of the film, a family having to relocate from St. Louis to New York. Complaints that they were too depressing from Miss Garland and director Vincente Minnelli resulted in changes that enabled the piece to stand on its own. The song is Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas.
Mm.
Though the film is set in 1904, the lyrics contain unmistakably contemporary references when it was released in November of 1944. On June 6th of that year, the Allies had successfully landed at Normandy, but at a cost of over 2,000 casualties. Despite multiple Allied victories on both fronts and the liberation of cities throughout Europe, including Rome and Paris, the war was not yet over. And in mid-December, the Germans would launch a deadly final assault in the Ardennes, the Battle of the Bulge. On December 22nd, in the frozen hell of Bastogne, Brigadier General Anthony McAuliffe would respond to a German demand for surrender with one word, nuts. To a war-weary public and the military, Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas provided a measure of solace when it was most needed, as they found their situation uniquely reflected in the words. Have yourself a merry little Christmas, let your heart be light. From now on, our troubles will be miles away, was certainly the hope of many. Faithful friends who are dear to us, gather near to us once more, could be taken to mean both the immediate family and our military allies. Through the years, we all will be together, if the fates allow. Originally, if the Lord allows, speaks for itself. Until then, we'll have to muddle through somehow. The use of the Britishism, muddle through, reflects an awareness of the English penchant for understated perseverance, even in times of such adversity as the bombing of London and the Battle of Britain. Following the debut of the movie, the song became extremely popular, especially among the military. When Judy Garland sang it at the Hollywood canteen, brave men wept openly. Over the many Christmases since it was first heard, the song has retained its appeal and is considered one of the most popular Christmas songs. It has been recorded by singers ranging from Ella Fitzgerald to Garth Brooks to Bette Midler. In 1957, Frank Sinatra, in an effort to make the lyrics less melancholy, asked Hugh Martin to change the line, "Until then we'll have to muddle through somehow." Martin's response was, "Hang a shining star upon the highest bough." Although the latter version is the one most people are familiar with, in recent years, major talents, including James Taylor, have rediscovered the beauty and meaning of the original lyrics. This Christmas, we are engaged with enemies on multiple fronts and at home. The men and women in our armed forces are involved in Afghanistan, in Korea, and elsewhere. Others are dispatched to contain the violence along our southern border. On the home front, unemployment, recession, I'll add this, and Obamacare, are impacting the lives of our fellow citizens in numbers unprecedented in the modern era. At such a time, both consolation and inspiration might come from looking back in a shared musical moment to another generation, one that faced uncertainty, privation, and the immediate possibility of inestimable loss, but managed to muddle through somehow. So will we. Have yourself a merry little Christmas.
Great job, Frank. Great job.
Beautiful.
I have two notes I made to myself here as you were going through, and then a third note just as you ended. And I'll start with that one first, and that is the importance of faith. There's this big conflict in the country between, what is Christmas? Is it just another shopping day or Santa Claus? And I have nothing against Santa Claus, but it is really the birth of Christ, for us Christians, obviously. And I just find the importance of faith, when you're facing adversity and hard times, how important faith is. And not just in a soldier, in a faraway land, but the family back home who didn't know whether he would make it back. So that's one point. And then the other is the number of songs that came out of World War II that were Christmas related. I know White Christmas for sure. That one was a very popular movie in 1941, I believe, that became almost a classic for the soldiers. And I think the other one, I could be wrong, but the other one was I'll Be Home for Christmas. That's the other one, too, that was very popular during the war. So anyway, just your reactions to what I just said.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. I think that, who was it? It was a chaplain, I believe, years ago during the war who said, there are no atheists in foxholes. And when times get tough, I think, and they're really tough, I think people tend to turn back toward faith. And unfortunately, so much of the memories I'm hearing from Tercy, from you, and from me have to do with the fact that our families, we were so fortunate in that our families raised us in an atmosphere of faith and, as they say, the fear of God, but it really means an appreciation of the awesomeness and power of God. And we were lucky. Many kids, young people today, grow up without having that. And you just have to wonder what will happen to them when the going gets really tough in their lives.
Yeah,
Albert Schweitzer once said something. He said, no man is truly happy unless he serves a cause larger than himself. And for many people, I don't think that exists.
No, I think you're right. But I have a, I guess I'm an optimist, and I think that they're going to find themselves in a foxhole maybe someday and in essence come to terms with that faith, because I think it's inside of them. They're just maybe they just don't want to let it out, because most of them were brought up in Christian homes and in good homes, but they just maybe rebelled from that. And maybe that's what they're going through. But, Tercy, let me ask you a question. When you do your stories, and I know your stories are not necessarily about religion, but when you do your stories, do you bring faith into it once in a while?
Well, because I'm telling a folktale, many times I can say, like there's one about the stolen smells, and that has nothing. It's the one I tell in middle school, and there's a character named Sebastian, and he bows his head and he thanks God, for his father and his mother and the memories. So I can do that very naturally because it's part of the story. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, no, I understand.
Yeah.
Because some of the folk stories that you tell are folk stories that are more. Well, I mean, they're not necessarily religious. I mean, like, they're just folk stories. In your case, you do a lot of folk stories about Latin America, right? When in some cases,
right.
They have, native stories, you know, that are associated with it. But I think it's important, Frank, what you said about faith and how people eventually, if you don't have it, I think, I will tell you that I think if you're an atheist and you start getting older and all of a sudden you're facing the fact that you're not going to be around as long as you thought anymore, I bet that there's a lot of them who come to terms with their lack of faith at that moment. Maybe that's how they find faith, you know, a last-minute conversion, as they like to say.
I believe
that for Christians, for people who believe, who are Christians, one of my favorite verses, and I'm paraphrasing, it says that we're supposed to live in such a way that people will ask us about the hope that is in us. And sometimes we don't need to talk a lot. We just need to live it in our very daily life, you know, at the grocery store, at the light, stoplight, you know, think about the bumper stickers we may have behind us, you know, in our car. How are we behaving when we're driving? Being patient in line at the grocery store. I mean, just that small kindness that sometimes a smile, I think it just means so much. I think we need to live it. And I think being in the schools as much as I am, a lot of teachers live their faith, and the children
Good.
See it.
Right. Frank, you were going to say something. I'm sorry.
Sorry.
I think that what Tosi said is beautiful and very apropos. When you were talking about the people, you know, deathbed conversions, I always think of one of the great atheists of all time, supposedly Voltaire, who was kind of dragged kicking and screaming into faith and reputedly said on his deathbed, "Oh God, if there is a God, save my soul if I have a soul."
That is a good one. Well, I do want to thank both of you for joining me today on this special Christmas show, and we look forward to a lot more shows together, Frank, when we talk politics and Tersi, we have a
yeah.
Tersi and I have an upcoming show on the Three Wise Men, which is what we little Cuban kids used to. That's how we used to get our gifts, you know, from the Three Wise Men, not from Santa Claus. But that's just a great memory that I have of being a little kid in Cuba and, you know, sitting around waiting for the Three Wise Men to bring you. Did you celebrate that too, Tersi? I'm sure you did. You know,
oh,
about
yes,
the three
Epiphany. It's Epiphany. It's also called Little Christmas, All Christmas in the United States. A lot of children even celebrated it in Appalachia. But yes, as far as being Cuban, yes, that was what I celebrated, the Three Wise Men. So it was pretty wonderful.
Yeah,
you know, that's
right. Go ahead, Frank. Yeah,
I was going to say that's fascinating because one of my grandmothers was Dutch, and in Holland it's Saint Nicholas Day, December 6th, when the kids get their gifts. And just one quick comment, Tersi. You make me wish I was still in school and understood Spanish and could hear you speak that in the original. It's so beautiful.
Oh, thank you. I was going to tell you to. Well, I'm going to send you an email later. My brother-in-law is from Wisconsin.
Oh, great.
And I'm going to send you an email.
Excellent.
Okay?
Excellent.
There's a song that I think you would like, and he's a folk singer. So I'm going to send you an email and let you, tell you about it. You may have heard about him, so I'll do that later. But thank you for having me in your show so much today, Silvio.
Well, my
Silvio.
Pleasure, Tersi. I'm here. No,
okay.
I was listening to both of you. I didn't fall asleep.
I thought maybe I had disconnected accidentally.
No. We're all connected. We're all connected today. But I just wanted to say that thank you very much to both of you for making this show. I was going to say that Tersi will be We'll be back on around January 6th. I need to check the calendar and see what day it actually falls on. But we're going to do a little memory of the three wise men. But I have a question for you, Frank. You grew up Catholic in the United States. And in New York, as I recall,
right.
Wasn't there something about the January 6th? I mean, was there a reference to it when you were growing up?
Oh, well, very much so, very much so. We called it Little Christmas.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know, it's the 12 days of Christmas actually begin on Christmas and
mm-hmm.
end on January 6th.
Yes.
And in some of the, I can remember when I lived in Baltimore, there were a lot of parties, 12th night parties, as they were called. And people would celebrate, and that was, you know, you left your Christmas tree up that long, at least. And that was the kind of end of the season. It was just a wonderful time in between. There was it kind of prolonged the holiday, let's put it that way.
Okay.
And,
well,
there was,
Go ahead, Frank.
No, just that there was a great deal of feeling about it. In fact, if you had a nativity set, and we still do this, a creche, a representation of the nativity, you kept the wise men figures out of it until January 6th, and then you put them in.
That's right. No, it's interesting. You mentioned that. I just had a couple of thoughts. So you mentioned that, but you're right. In all of the pictures or images that you see of the nativity set, they have the three wise men there, which is, I mean, I understand. They do it for the celebration. But I always did tell my friends growing up, wait a minute, they haven't gotten there yet. They're,
right.
still, on the, you know, they're still on their way there. I mean, you got another 10 days or so to get there. But one of the things I know as a kid, Tercy, maybe you relate to this all, but as a little kid growing up in Cuba, that for me, those 10 days between December 25th and January 6th, those were really the exciting days to be a kid. You know, I think of my sons, you know,
yeah.
they get excited. You know, my sons used to get excited, you know, on the days as we got to Christmas Eve and then Christmas morning, and they would open their gifts. But for you and I growing up, Darcy, the excitement just started, really, and it would be building up until the night of January 5th when we would go to bed early, and then January the 6th, you know, we would find the gifts. We didn't have a big Christmas tree. I don't think that was a custom to have a huge tree. We just had a very small one in our home. But I remember my grandmother, my beautiful grandmother would say, you know, those three wise men are so polite. I offer them coffee and their camels ate the, and so we would actually leave grass for the camels.
Yes.
And stuff, you know, we do stuff like
water.
That. Right, but then, of course, as I mentioned the other day to Tercy, I learned many years later that camels don't drink that much water anyway. So if all these Cuban kids were leaving them water, somebody was drinking the water, not the camels. But
well,
I just think
let me ask you something, Silvio. Do you have a minute Do you have a minute for a little song?
Go ahead.
I want to let's do the Arbolito song. Do you know it so you can sing it with me?
No, I don't know that song. I don't know that song. No,
okay,
I don't know that song.
I'm gonna translate it. Okay.
Okay.
Tonight is a good night. We're going to the woods, little brother, to cut a tree, a little tree, because the night is calm. The kings, the three kings, or the three wise men, and the shepherds are following a star. They're singing to the baby Jesus, son of the beautiful virgin. Little tree, I'm going to put little bells on you. I want you to be so pretty because we're going to offer you to the newborn. We're going to go down the path, down the little path to Bethlehem. We're going to go tonight because the child king has been born. And so I'm just going to sing it to you, okay?
All right, go ahead. Maybe I'll probably recognize it when I hear it. Go ahead.
Esta noche es noche buena. Vamos al monte, hermanito, a cortar un arbolito, porque la noche es serena. Los reyes y los pastores andan siguiendo una estrella. le cantan a Jesús niño, hijo de la Virgen bella. Arbolito, arbolito, campanitas te pondré. Quiero que seas bonito, que al recién nacido te voy a ofrecer. Iremos por el camino, caminito de Belén. Iremos porque esta noche ha nacido el niño rey. Olé.
All right.
There it is.
Lovely. Thank you.
Frank, well, Terzi just put a lot of pressure on you to sing a song, I think.
He can sing Silent Night.
Yeah, but I should have prepared you for that one, Frank. Maybe next year you can play your guitar, because I didn't know she was going to sing either. But I'm
right.
Glad she did. That's a beautiful.
Well, that's great.
I remember that.
Stefan recorded it, but it's a very old song.
Yes, no, it sounds like it just from the story, but it. Yeah, I do remember that song now that I heard the melody. And this is a very traditional, but it sounds like something from Spain, right? Because of the ole at the end, right?
Yes, tonight with my family, you know, I have castanets that I'm taking, and tonight all of us get together. My extended family, I mean, we're talking cousins and a lot of people. There are a bunch of us, and tonight we sing a lot. We sing a lot, and we even have a silly conga line around the house, and we make our own what is that thing that people take at carnival? Farola?
Right. You mean the things they hold and move around? Yeah, right, yeah.
Right. It's like a light, supposedly.
We make it
out of whatever we can find, and sometimes we have different talents. And usually it's the same. We do the same talent every year, but everybody claps like they had seen it for the first time.
Right.
And we play a cup game that's very, very old. Our family has been playing it for almost 70 years now, and the song comes from Spain. And look it up in Google, from Cordoba to Seville, but it's in Spanish. Desde Cordoba a Sevilla. There's a lot about that game that we play. I can't wait for tonight. Tonight's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, Frank, I'm hoping to hear that the Burke family is going to do La Conga tonight in Wisconsin.
Well, we had the kids over and the grandkids for Christmas yesterday, so it'll be a very short conga line. It will just be my wife, Peggy, myself, and the dog.
Oh, how sweet, though.
But just don't go outside, because it's probably pretty cold outside, I'm going to guess.
I believe it's supposed to be 16, balmy 16 today.
Yeah. Well, I do want to thank both of you for joining me today, and I hope that we make this into a tradition, Frank and Terzi, and we do it every December 24th, because I've had a lot of fun doing this with both of you, and I just want to say thanks on a personal level for your friendships, and I wish you the very best. Feliz Navidad, Merry Christmas, a very successful New Year, and we'll get together again, I hope very soon, Frank, and I hope very soon. Well, Terzi, I know we're going to be getting together in about 10 or 12 days. And, Frank, after the first of the year, we'll get back into our political discussions. I think there's a lot on the table. There's a lot on the table for you and I to get into.
There certainly is, and I want to thank both of you and to thank you so much and ask a blessing from God on all of your families for this Christmas and on all our listeners and their families also.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much to both of you. So Feliz Navidad to both of you. Merry Christmas.
Feliz Navidad.
Yeah, enjoy your day with your families. And that's going to do it, folks. Thanks, Frank. Thanks, Terzi. And, Merry Christmas to all of you. I hope you enjoyed what I hope becomes our annual Christmas Eve program, because I sure had a lot of fun with Frank and Terzi. Enjoy yourself and go to the midnight mass that I used to remember at midnight, but now they do it at 9 o'clock, which is probably a little bit easier as I get a little bit older. Merry Christmas. Feliz Navidad, everybody. This is Silvio Cantu in Dallas.
inappropriate a comment about AIDS in Africa. Bottom line, I think we should just lower our voices, be tolerant, let people without castigating people for the choices.
That would be difficult to do, though, Eric, because look at the size.